Okay, I'm going to start part two of Righteous Judging. This is missed out on the recording of the first one, and so anyway, I'm instead of doing it live in front of some people, I'm doing it in front of a mirror, which kind of feels a little different. But anyway, in part one, I kind of went over some verses. Went over some Greek and Hebrew words, mishpat, shaphat, tzedaka, and Greek words, and tried to go back to the meaning of those words, and then started bringing up verses like what Yeshua said, and some of the things that he also said besides judge not lest you be judged. And so there was verses where he told us, like in John, I think it's 24, or John 7:24, that he says, don't judge according to appearance, but judge a righteous judgment. He also said, beware of false prophets. And so how do we do that without making some form of judgment? He also said, don't cast pearls before swines and dogs. So we need to know what makes a pearl, and also who's a swine and a dog. And that also comes from Matthew 7:1, just a breath after judge not. That's where judge not, it comes from Matthew 7:1. So anyway, in the second portion here, I'm going to go to Isaiah 46:9. It says, remember the former things of old, for I am God and there is none else. I am God and there is none like me. Verse 10, declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times of things that are not yet done. So anyway, I'm going to go back to what the former things were. Like I said in Isaiah 1:26, God says, I will restore the judges as at first and the counselors at the beginning. So let's see what was at the first. I want to go back to Exodus 2:14 through 17, and this is the farthest back that I kind of see, which I think is interesting. And so Exodus 2:14 through 17, like I said, and it says, and he said, this is the situation. Moses killed the Egyptian, and now he's breaking up two Hebrew brothers in a fight, and so he's stepping in. And so this is what one of those individuals said. And he said, who made thee a prince and a judge, which is Shaphat, 81:99, over us? Intendest thou to kill me as thou killedst the Egyptian? And Moses feared and said, surely this thing is known. Now when Pharaoh heard this thing, he sought to slay Moses, but Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian. Midian I'm going to focus on here in a little bit. And he sat down by the well. Now the priest of Midian, we'll look at that, had seven daughters, and they came and drew water and filled the troughs to water their father's flocks. And the shepherds came and drove them away. But Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flocks. So, Exodus 18:1. And it says, when Jethro, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law, heard of all that God had done for Moses and for Israel, his people, and that God had brought Israel out of Egypt. In the previous verse, it talks about Moses fled to the land of Midian. And anyway, the priest thereof didn't mention Jethro, but here in 18:1 it mentions that Jethro was the priest of Midian. So anyway, I want to look up the meaning of Jethro, which I find is interesting. And that comes from H3503. And it's a suffix, and it kind of means his excellence. So Jethro comes from a meaning of his excellence. Now Midian comes from H4080, and it's the same as 4079. And it's Midian is a son of Abraham. So we're going to do a rabbit trail here and look up 4079, which is a variation of 4066. And anyway, it mentions brawling contention. So we're going to look up 4066. And that comes from H1777. And anyway, 4066 definition is a contest, a quarrel, brawling, contention, discord, strife. So now let's look up H1777. And the primitive root is to rule by implication, to judge as empire, also is to strive as at law. Contend, execute judgment, judge, minister judgment, plead the cause, at strive. And also I put a note down about Bet Din. Bet is the house, and here they're using Din, which is the house of judging. And what I understand about Judaism a little bit, that if you're intending to convert to Judaism, you're going to be facing with the Bet Din. Some people are going to ask you some questions, so they're going to judge to see if you're ready to convert to Judaism, which I won't go along with. But anyway, so here Midian deals with a land of, is attached to word of judging, and also Jethro, his name means his excellence. So anyway, here Moses runs off to this land for 40 years. And so I'm kind of wondering if Moses is being groomed, and it's funny how God has a last laugh. So here the Hebrew people, a person says, who made you a prince and a judge? Well, Moses eventually did become a judge after 40 years in preparation, I believe, to fill that position. And so we're going to look at Exodus 18:19 through 22. And it's hearken now unto my voice. This is Jethro talking. And I'll give thee counsel, and God shall be with thee. Be thou for thy people to Godward, that thou mayest bring the cause unto God. And thou shalt teach them ordinances and laws, and thou shalt show them the way wherein they must go, they must walk, and the work that they must do. Moreover, thou shalt provide out of all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them to be rulers of thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. Let them judge the people at all seasons, and it shall be that every great matter that they shall bring to thee, but every small matter they shall judge, so shall it be easy for thyself, and they shall bear the burden with thee. It's interesting that Jethro, the priest of this land of judgment, also recommends to Moses, after he sees that Moses, everybody is bringing their cases to Moses to resolve, that Jethro also suggests that he sets up these judges. One thing is interesting is that he says that the harder cases bring to me, but the smaller ones, the smaller matters they shall judge. And so I look also with the issue with people that It depends on their understanding. So at times we might not be able to handle the bigger cases, but we might be able to look at the smaller cases and make righteous judging. Also, you kind of see that, and also in our court systems, we have various levels of courts. We got traffic court, criminal, civil, and then we go on up to the Supreme Court. So anyway, then also one thing I see out of this is possibly is that not only I like about the judges, that but Moses, it says in 18:20, thou shalt teach them ordinances and laws, and thou shalt show them the way wherein they must walk, and the work that they must do. So when people bring conflict, I would hope that these judges were patient enough to begin to teach these people why they're getting in the conflict. Are they dealing with unfair weights and measures with their neighbor? Is there false testimony? Are they moving the boundary line? The aspect of usury? Those type of things, and I'll bring that up here in a little bit of the duties of the judges. So that's the next thing, is what is the duty of the judges? So if you're going to send a judge, what criteria are you going to look at as you listen to these different cases? And so anyway, that's what I want to try to deal with. So anyway, I'm going to go to Deuteronomy 1:16 and 17, and I charge your judges with a shafat at that time, saying, hear the causes between your brethren, and judge shafat righteously between every man and his brother and the stranger that is with thee. He shall not respect persons in judgment, mishfat, but ye shall hear the small as well as the great. Ye shall not be afraid of the face of men, for the judgment, mishfat, is God's. In the cause that is too hard for you, bring it unto me, and I will hear it. So it's here Moses is talking again about the smaller matters versus the weightier matters, and if you can't handle the smaller matters, bring them to him. So it also mentions about not respecting, and there'll be the next verse of people, that everybody is the stranger, and everybody is supposed to be held on equal basis in applying judgment, so that we have righteous judging, or everything is just. Leviticus 19:15, and it says, and ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, mishfat, and thou shalt not respect the persons of the poor, and honor the person of the mighty, but in righteousness thou shalt judge, shafat, thy neighbor. So anyway, it's talking about the judging here, but you know, we are supposed to judge our neighbor and judge him righteously. That's taught in Torah. So anyway, here's what I like, is that they're not supposed to respect the persons of the poor over the rich. So sometimes in our society, even though our society was based on the Bible, that we haven't read or understood, that we can see that the rich in our society is favored over the poor. And sometimes the poor could also be favored over the rich. Anyway, we have a bunch of lobbyists in our government process, and so anyway, you can see that a lot of the rich is trying to get favor over situations. So anyway, in Torah, which I like, is this government that God was trying to set up, that shouldn't happen. Leviticus 19:35-17, and ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, shafat, in met yards, in weights, and in measures, just balances, just weights, a just ephod, and a just hin shall ye have. I am the Lord your God, which brought you out of the land of Egypt. Therefore shall ye observe all my statutes and all my judgments, mishfat, and do them. I am the Lord. So God here is saying that to observe all my statutes and judgments. And I'll mention that those two words. There's a combination throughout Deuteronomy. I'm going to comment about that later. But here, again, the judges are supposed to do no unrighteousness and judgment. So when people bring things in front of the judge or judges or whatever the situation back then, that one thing I think they would look for is unfair weights and measures. One thing when I began to got into this judging situation back in the 80s that I felt like God began to open up that for me is that I had a boss. I was laid off from the railroad, and I had a boss that would lie all the time. One day he'd make his wife lie. He tried to make me lie, and I talked to him one day, and he said everybody does it, so that was his reasoning. About 6 months later went by, and Bill went and talked to he says it was a Christian builder, and so anyway, he comes back after that meeting and says, "That Chuck's no Christian. He lied to my face." And he says, "That's one thing I can't stand is somebody lying to my face." Well, at the time, the Lord began was teaching me the three verses that stood out to me as judge not lest you judge. For out of the heart the mouth speaks, and by your words you justify yourself, and by your words you condemn yourself. So, verse 2, it says, "For in the manner that you judge will be judged unto you, and the measure that you measure will be measured to you." So I used to use that, "the manner that you judge will be judged unto you," as the standard that you apply will be applied back to you. And so here's Bill's standard out of his own words, that I can't stand somebody lying in my face. And I could see him before the judge in the courtroom, and the judge all would have to just play that back and says, "Then how do you justify all your lies before everybody else? If you can't stand it, then you know why are you lying to other people?" Interesting too, I didn't know Torah, but Bill, after I went back to work for the railroad, Bill, I went up and saw him, and he told me about his son, whose name was, well, Billy, but it's Billy Jr., had a problem with lying. The teachers were calling them and telling Bill and his wife about this problem that they're seeing in their son. And one night, I guess it was kind of like the exorcist, I guess some things really happened. And so Bill one day woke up, and he said, I see where it was coming from, that in Deuteronomy says teach your children. And so anyway, Bill was teaching him how to lie. Bill didn't see one aspect. One day I was there on a Saturday, and Bill's parents lived with him in an extended family. And so one day the phone rang, and all the parents or adults sitting around the table, as one of the kids was going to answer the phone, says, "We're not here." So here, not knowing that what we're doing intentionally, but what are we teaching the kids? We're teaching them to lie. So anyway, it was interesting as verses and stuff began to speak more, become more alive to me at that time. So anyway, let's go on. Deuteronomy 19, 18 through 19. "And the judge of Shaphat shall make diligent inquisitions, and behold, if the witness be a false witness and hath testified falsely against thy brother, then shall ye do unto him as he hath thought to have done unto his brother. So shall you put away evil from among you." So one thing I like about this is that the judges are supposed to diligently make inquisitions. There's another verse that will deal with more of the common person, let's say. But anyway, let's look at a lot of human problems and make it in a practical situation. How many of us do not really gather our facts or diligently look into issues before we make a judgment? Later on, we find out that we gather some other facts and realize that we were in error. That's also where John, Yeshua said in John 24:29, I think that is, where he says, "Don't judge according to appearance, but judge your righteous judgment." So is the Lord looking back at Torah and saying, don't look at the surface, but make sure you gather all your facts before you make your judgment? And that's where, like even yesterday, the other day with Lee Miller, he mentioned something about concrete. He says, don't pour the concrete before you're ready to pour it or whatever. I wish I could remember quite how he put that. But anyway, make sure you gather your facts. And also, it was interesting too in his talk that he mentioned about somebody asked him a question about opinion about something, and he says, well, like he hadn't really looked into it completely, and so he wanted to reserve making any comments about it because he hadn't really studied. And so here I see this being applied, that diligently look into issues. So anyway, so we do that in our lives at times. We put things on shelves and try to gather information. Deuteronomy 24:17, thou shalt not pervert judgment, mishpat, of the strangers, nor the fatherless, nor take a widow's raiment to pledge. So again, the judges we are not supposed to also, so the strangers, we're supposed to watch out for the fatherless and the widows, that they're not being taken advantage of. Deuteronomy 16:19, and thou shalt not wrestle with judgment, thou shalt not respect persons, either take a gift, forget to blind the eyes of the wise and pervert the word of the righteous. So anyway, it says don't respect thou shalt not respect persons, but it also is neither take a gift. Again, going back to our government based on the Bible, how many gifts are given to our leaders and what it's doing to them. So in God's government, he says don't take a gift, don't take a bribe. Because the bribe will distort your judgment. You're going to favor the rich or whoever is giving you the gift over other people. Exodus 18:16, and they shall when they have a matter, they come unto me, and I judge between one and another, and I do make them know the statutes of God and his laws. So anyway, again, I kind of mentioned this before, that I think it's kind of neat to think that one of the positions of judging is that make known to the people the statutes of God's and his laws. So it's not just ready to hit the gavel and take them out and hang them or something or whatever. I know some cases aren't that severe, but anyway, I would hope that they would explain to these people and try to bring to an understanding of where the conflict, where the roots are, the conflicts are coming from. Deuteronomy 13:13-15, certain men of Baal are gone out from among you and have withdrawn the inhabitants of their city, saying, let us go and serve other gods which ye have not known. Then shalt thou inquire and make search and ask diligently. And behold, if it be true and things certain, that such abomination is wrought among you, thou shalt surely smite the inhabitants of the city with the edge of the sword and destroy it utterly, and all that is therein, and the cattle thereof, with the edge of the sword. So here it kind of deals not particularly with the judges, but I see more of the common person. Let's say the common person, I don't like that particularly. But anyway, that if we see some false teachings, somebody coming in and bringing in really false doctrines, that we're supposed to inquire and make search of and ask diligently. So here again is this aspect of diligently looking into issues before we make our judgments. Exodus 22:25, if thou lend money to any of my people that is poor by thee, thou shalt not be to him as a usurer, neither shalt thou lay upon him usury. So here's another issue with the judges, to something to look for. Deuteronomy 19:14, you shall not remove your neighbor's landmark, which they of old have set in your inheritance, which you shall inherit in the land that the Lord your God gives you to possess it. Don't move your boundary markers here. So anyway, I had a situation, and I know a neighbor had a situation. I got 8 acres, and there was a neighbor trying to put up a fence, and it was going on to their property. And so anyway, they had to go through brought in some attorneys and stuff about it. There was a little bit of a hassle, and I had a somewhat similar situation. Anyways, second thing, also in Torah, it talks about care of your neighbor's lost animals. So that's one thing of consideration. Now I'm going to go to some other verses. That was kind of what I see the duty of the judges, and some things that they would look for as they hear the cases between the brothers and trying to resolve that. So anyway, I want to go to 1 Kings chapter 3, 5 through 11. And in Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Moses in a dream by night, and God said, "Ask what I shall give thee." And Solomon said, "Thou hast shown unto thy servant David my father great mercy, according as he has walked before thee in truth and in righteousness and in uprightness of heart with thee. And thou hast kept for him this great kindness, that thou hast given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. And now, O Lord my God, thou hast made thy servant king instead of David my father, and I am but a little child, and I know not how to go out and to come in. And thy servant is in the midst of thy people, which thou hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge Shaphat, thy people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge Shaphat, this thy so great a people?" And the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And the Lord said unto him, "Because thou hast asked this thing, and hast not asked for thyself long life, neither hast asked riches for thyself, nor hast asked thy life of thy enemy, but thou hast asked for thyself understanding to discern judgment, Mishpat." So there's a lot in this that I see. Is first of all, I like that he says, "I'm a little child." So where in the Gospels have we heard about being a little child? It says that the only way we can enter in his kingdom is as a child. So I like that connection. Also, the thing is with all of us, this deals with all of us, is that we have to enter in the kingdom as a child. We have to realize that like Lee was mentioned about morons, that we're all morons. And there is a deal about idiots too, that I can't remember how that comes about, but there's something about a word that's attached to idiot. So we're kind of clueless. As we all are, he says, "How can I judge thy great people? I don't even know between good and evil." And don't we all start from there? Maybe sometimes we don't realize that we're still in that situation of really knowing between good and evil. Also, I like the last bit that his heart was, he says that it pleased the Lord, and he says that you ask for understanding to discern judgment. So, an understanding to understand God's judgments. And so anyway, now I'm going to go to 1 Corinthians 2, 6 through 8. Well, no, this is going to go through 16. And I like these verses because it's going to talk about the wisdom of this world versus the wisdom of God. And so anyway, it says, how about that we speak wisdom among them that are perfect, yet not the wisdom of this world, nor of the princes of this world that come to naught. That kind of makes me think of sometimes about criticizing our government or leaders and stuff. But here Paul is saying that, talking about the wisdom of this world and the princes. So he was kind of talking about some of the leadership back then. But anyway, so verse 7, but we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, even the hidden wisdom which God ordained before the world unto our glory, which none of the princes of this world knew. There he's talking about the princes. For had they known it, they would have not crucified the Lord of glory. But as it is written, I have not seen nor ear heard, neither have entered into the heart of man the things which God had prepared for them to love him. But God revealed them unto us by his Spirit. For the Spirit searches all things, yea, the deep things of God. For what man knoweth the things of man, save the spirit of man which is in him? Even so the things of God knoweth no man but the Spirit of God. Now we have received not the spirit of this world, but the Spirit which is of God, that we might know the things that are freely given to us of God. Which things also we speak, not in the words which man's wisdom teaches, but which the Holy Spirit teaches, comparing spiritual things with spiritual. But the natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness unto him, neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned. But he that is spiritual judges all things. I'm going to read that again. But he that is spiritual judges all things, yet he himself is judged of no man. For who hath known the mind of the Lord, that he may instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ. Verse 15 really used to bother me a lot. But he that is spiritual judges all things, but he himself is judged of no man. If the spiritual man judges all things, and again, now if we're going to be spiritual, one of the things is that we're able to judge all things. But if a spiritual man is able to judge, is because we've been given the Spirit of God which is freely given to us, but also the Spirit teaches, searches the Father, and it says that yea, the deep things of God. So the Spirit is search all things, the deep things. For the Spirit searches all things, yea, the deep things of God. So the Spirit is searching for the deep things of God, and so the Spirit is teaching us God's heart, his mind, the way he thinks, the way he looks at things, and so we're beginning to know the Father. And so because of that, the spiritual man can judge all things, because we know his attitude, what he thinks about stuff. Even I'm just thinking of a child. Sometimes, you know, the father says, don't do this. And so the child's in a situation. He says, Rob, I better not do that because I know what my father thinks, you know. And so they're looking back at what their father's desire is. And so they are obedient to their father. But yet he is judged of no man. And so that, like I said, that verse kind of bothered me, is because the reason why he's not judged of no man is because if the world looks at God's wisdom as foolishness, what's he going to do with the spiritual man? Because the spiritual man is going to be like his father. He's taken on, let's say, the characteristics of the Father, and so the world is going to look at him in the same way, and is not going to really be able to judge him properly. So he is judged of no man because they look at him as foolishness as they do God. I'm going to go to 14. Well, the same thing is, but 14 and 15, and I want to look at some words here. But it says the natural man receiveth not the things of the spirit of the spirit of God, for they are foolishness unto him. Neither can they know them, because they are spiritually discerned. But he that is spiritual judgeth all things, yet he himself is judged of no man. And what I'm going to point out is why we need to look at and be careful of how we're reading the English words, because and we need to look at the Greek and the Hebrew word. So anyway, I want to so discerned comes from G 350, which is anacrino. Also in verse 15, judgeth is the same anacrino, and judged is anacrino. So those three words in those two verses all come anacrino, but yet they're translated in three different English words: discern, judgeth, and judged. Anyway, now I'm going to go to another verse, but I've got four statements here, and it comes from a passage in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, 1 through 6. And anyway, so I got these, and so which one or ones come from Scripture or Bible translation? Is it so that there is not a wise man among you? Number two, is it impossible that there is not among them one who is learned? Three, is it impossible that there is not among them one who is knowledgeable? And four, is the Gemara answers, it is impossible that there is not among them one who is knowledgeable about the law of loans and of permissions. Well, the actual answer is there's only one of those verses, and it's the first one. Is it so that there is not a wise man among you? Why I'm bringing up the last three is because it was interesting. I do go to a synagogue, and anyway, in the last year and stuff, we started digging into the Talmud. One of the portion that we are is on the Sanhedrin, which is the judges. Interesting that we landed on that, not because of my choice. And so anyway, we're reading along, and all of a sudden, that first one pops out. Is it impossible that there is not among them one who has learned? Well, that popped me back to 1 Corinthians chapter 6, 1 through 6. And so anyway, those three verses, one, the first one is from the literal translation, then there's a commentary on that, and then in the notes. So two is from the literal translations, three is from the commentaries, and four is from the notes. So anyway, so it makes me think, is this a kind of a phrase or a thought or something that was common, because the Gemara was around 200, and the Mishnah, I think, was around 200, and the Gemara is around 4. So the Talmud, so that was 200 years away from Paul. But was there something there that actually probably 150 years? But anyway, some kind of a phrase that was used, that Paul used, that was mentioned in the Talmud. So anyway, 1 Corinthians chapter 6, 1 through 6, and it says, dare any of you, having a matter against another, go to the law before the unjust, and not before the saints? Do you not know that the saints shall judge Crino, which is G 29:19, the world? And if the world shall be judged Crino by you, are you not unworthy to judge? It's 29:22. I'm bad on pronouncing English, let alone Greek and Hebrew. So anyway, the smallest matters. Know ye not that ye shall judge Carino angels, how much more things that pertain to this world? If then you have judgments, 29:22, of things pertaining to this life, shall them to judge who are least esteemed in the church. I speak to your shame. Is it so that there is not a wise man among you? No, not one who shall be able to judge, which is 1252 Diocrino, between his brother. But brother goes to the law with brother, and that before the ungodly. This verse really hit me one time where I could see where Paul was upset, is because here the believers were taking their lawsuits or their complaints to ungodly people, and he's saying, and not before the saints. And what hit me was, who should be knows more about God's law and his commandments? The godly people, or the saints, or the ungodly people? And so Paul's upset, and who should know more about God's law and being able to hopefully resolve conflict between brothers is the believers, God's people. And so anyway, one thing I also think is this kind of prophetic, which shows the position of God's people today, not knowing that they are supposed to judge and know how to judge and how to resolve conflict. And we could use a lot of that today amongst God's people. Hebrews 11:11. This is different. It says, through faith also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed, and was delivered of child when she was past age, because she judged, which is G 22:33, him faithful who was promised. I like this is because Sarah judged God. People ever think about judging God? Anyway, let me mention the verse, and I'll bring that up a little bit more. With 22:23, and if you look up that a little bit, it goes into mentioning judge, figuratively to deem, that is to is consider, governor, rule over, suppose, think. So that's kind of the meaning of that word of that word judge. So have we ever thought about us judging God, and how have we judged him? Have we diligently studied and gathered evidence before we make our judgment? And the example of Yeshua, where I see where Yeshua was accused of doing the works of Satan and being Beelzebub. And so these people diligently look into who Yeshua was, where some believed that he was Messiah. That was their judgment. And so with even dealing with God, Father, or whatever you want to say, here is how many people, I know people that don't know if they even believe in if he exists, or who he is. Is he a thing, a force, or whatever? So so we are judging God. Do we have we gathered all our facts? Sometimes we put it in a box and say, he wouldn't do this or do that, and he loves everybody. When it comes to homosexuality and stuff, that's he loves everybody. He's not condemning anybody and stuff. So anyway, we do judge God as Sarah did. Hopefully we want to be right about it. I want to go to Peter and Cornelius in Acts 10:10, and I think that goes through 28, but I'm just skip some verses. So 10 through 15 right now. and he became very hungry and would have eaten, but while they made ready, he fell into a trance and saw heaven open and a certain vessel descending on him as it had been a great sheet knit at the four corners and let down to the earth, wherein were all the manner of a four-footed beast and of the earth, the wild beasts, the creeping things, and the fowls of the air. And there came a voice to him, "Rise, Peter, kill and eat." And Peter said, "Not so, Lord, for I have never eaten anything that is common or unclean." And the voice spoke unto him again the second time, and the Lord hath cleansed what the Lord hath cleansed, thou shalt not call thy common. So we'll go over that. I kind of messed that up. And the voice spoke unto him again the second time and says, "What God hath cleansed, that call not thou common." So God's going to do a little adjustment here on Peter's outlook. I'm going to bring up Isaiah 5:20. It says, "You call good evil and evil good." So God's judgment towards Cornelius is that Cornelius is a clean man. But from Peter's perspective and also other Jews, that this would be an unclean man. And I got some other verses that will kind of also bring that out. Acts 10:17-19 and 28. "Now while Peter doubted in himself what the vision which had he had seen should mean, behold, the men which were sent from Cornelius had made an inquiry for Simon's house and stood before the gates and called and asked whether Simon, which was surnamed Peter, was lodged there. And while Peter thought on the vision, the Spirit said to him, 'Behold, three men seek thee.'" 28, "And he said unto them, 'You know now that," of course, I think Peter's talking to these people, "you know now that it is unlawful thing for a man that is a Jew to keep company or come to one of another's nations, but God has shown me that I should not call any man common or unclean." So anyway, God did a little adjustment in Peter's judging attitude that this would be a clean man. And also the thing is because of his previous false judging situation of not seeing it through God's eyes, and that's what we are striving should be, is to try to see things through his eyes, that it also breaks fellowship with people where he's not wanting to come near or talk or associate. So that applies to even us today and how we are looking at others. Okay, so anyway, Acts 11:5 through 9, and this is still dealing with Cornelius. So anyway, Peter's going back to explain this occurrence, and he says, "I was in the city of Joppa praying in a trance, and I saw a vision, a certain vessel descended as it had been a great sheet let down from heaven by four corners, and it came even to me, on the which, when I had fastened my eyes, I considered and saw a four-footed beast and the earth and wild beasts and creeping things and fowls of the air. And I heard a voice saying to me, 'Rise, Peter, slay and eat.' But I said, 'Not so, Lord, for nothing common or unclean has at any time entered into my mouth.' But the voice answered me again from heaven, 'What God has cleansed, thou call not you common.'" Okay, Isaiah 5:20, "Woe to them that call good evil and evil good, that put darkness to light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter." So anyway, this is one of the verses that when I struggled about judgment back in the 80s for about 3 years, this is the one that kind of was a final straw. And because I could see people preachers from the pulpit going along and saying, well, this is brother so-and-so, and you know, he's a good brother and a good man, a man of God, and you know, he's got this ministry and reaching out and doing great work and stuff. Well, see, that's a judgment. Calling somebody good, and it could be very truthful that this guy is good doing what he's saying, but it's still a judgment. And anyway, so I'm saying everybody's making judgments. You call, and you listen to people's words. They'll call somebody good, but they'll criticize about it, other people about what they're doing wrong and stuff. So anyway, we are judging, and that's what I'm trying to point out. I also put Amos 3:3. It says, "Can two walk together except they be agreed?" And I like this from the aspect that if God's calling something good and I perceive it as evil, then how close is my walk with Him? If God's saying like homosexuality is an abomination, that's what I see out of that. I remember talking to happens to be a Jew, and but it was from a reform, and so anyway, he's goes along a little bit with homosexuality, that they're being the gays are being persecuted, and so we need to accept them and everything else. But also he mentioned that he knew it was against Torah too. Mentioned about Torah, that's mentioned in Torah. So anyway, again, does your words condemn you, saying that you know it's against Torah and then you're going against what Torah says? And anyway, so how close are we walking if we're not really in agreement with God? Amos 5:7, 6:12, 5:15, and 5:24. I like this when I came across these. This is 5:7. Woe who turn judgment mishpat to wormwood and leave off righteousness in the earth. 6:12. Shall horses run upon the rock? Will one plow there with oxen? For ye have turned judgment mishpat into gall, and the fruit of righteousness into hemlock. 5:15, hate the evil and love the good, and establish judgment in the gates. It shall be that the Lord God of hosts shall be gracious unto the remnant of Joseph. 5:24, but let judgment run down as water and righteousness as a mighty stream. Going back to 5:15, it says, establish judgment in the gates. Well, as you know, the gates are where the leaders are. And so if you look at government and stuff and your leaders, wouldn't you want your leaders to have good judgment? And so anyway, it's interesting that Scripture brings that up years and years ago, that we need leaders that are righteous and having good judgment, seeing things through God's eyes. Anyway, I had a thought, and I know what it was. It says, hate evil and love good. It's interesting. At the synagogue, I do go to a Reformed synagogue, but in there, they, again, going back to the gays, I'm from Topeka, Kansas, and many people heard of Westside Baptist Church, where the Phelps' family is from, and so they're out picketing and stuff. And so they have this program among the churches in the synagogue about, to stop the hate. And if you look at Scripture, it says hate evil. So if you're going to stop the hate, I mean, you really, how can you stop the hate when the Scripture is telling you to hate evil? And also the thing is they don't like what the Phelpses are doing or what they stand for. And so some of them, maybe not them, but there are thoughts of hatred towards them. I remember reading some things in the email about having the Phelpses put on underwear with gasoline, soaked gasoline underwear, so that it kind of shows the hatred there. Hebrews 5, 12, and 13, and 1 Corinthians 3, 2, and so forth. For when ye by reason of time ye ought to be teachers, ye have need again that someone teach you the rudiments of the first principles of the oracles of God, and become such as have need of milk and not of solid food. For everyone that pertaineth of milk is without experience of the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. And then Paul says, I feed you with milk and not with meat, for ye have were not yet able to bear it, nay, not even now are you able. So I'm going to bring up some verses that doesn't mention judgment in it, but I see judgment happening. Here he's saying you ought to be teachers by now. You can't handle the meat. So here Paul is saying or thinking or whatever that there's some aspects of what is milk and what is meat, and what can you feed a person? You can't feed a meat because they can't handle it. And again, is this kind of a prophetic in a way? Is this the condition of God's people today? So anyway, all through this, again, he's making a judgment towards these people. Now, it's okay to be a baby, to have a baby and act like a baby, but when you're if you're like a 10-year-old acting like a 2-year-old, then that's when something needs to be said. And this is what I think is applying in this condition, that Paul says you ought to be teachers by now, but you're acting like babies. So anyways, like again, it's okay to be an infant, but it only comes, but hopefully you grow out of it. Some of the other verses, like I said, deals with judging, that I see judgment applied. Again, these are some of the verses in that 3-year period where I can see that judging is applied. It's not mentioned, but it happens. So anyway, Matthew 3, 7 through 10, dealing with John the Baptist. He said, you brood of vipers, he calls them broods of vipers. He says, show me fruits of repentance. So I don't have the verses right before me, but he says, show me fruits of repentance. So, but he calls them brood of vipers. So I see judging situation there. Acts 5, 1 through 11 is Ananias and Sapphira, where Peter deals with them. Ananias died, and then Peter even prophesied Sapphira's death. He said, you lied to God and lied to the Holy Spirit. And he says, the men that are back there that carried your husband away will carry you away. And she fell dead. Anyway, Acts 7, 51 through 53, and I got 7, 1 through 60 in here. Stephen is before the Sanhedrin, and anyway, he says, in the last portion, he says, you're like your fathers who killed the prophets, and that you killed the Messiah. So anyway, if you look at that, it's pretty stern all the way through that. Stephen goes back to and explains the history of the Hebrew people. If you look at Revelations chapter 2 and 3 and read through those, you can see where John is, and this is what I like, is bringing up the good things, saying you're doing this right, but he also is mentioning the bad things. Both individual people and groups are mentioned in that. One thing, I guess, before I'm kind of ready to close this out, is, well, let me go through and I'll try to back up with that. So my conclusions are, the Bible, does the Bible, going back to my conclusions as in part one, does the Bible teach that we are to judge? I think the Bible says that. Are we to judge righteously? Yes. And can we judge incorrectly and pervert righteousness? Yes, because the Torah scriptures are teaching that not to pervert judgment. Judgment is so misunderstood. I would hope that I'm pointing that out, that we're basing our theology on one verse and neglecting to look at these words and hundreds of in verses and like I said, in verses where we don't see judgment used, but we see these people judging situations. I don't know. Not want to blame. Is judgment very important? Yes, I think it is. It creates divisions if we don't do it properly. And so anyway, and I do not want to blame Satan for everything, but Satan has done a good job in hiding this truth from us. Satan would not like to see God's people come to this understanding regarding judgment, where God's people are like in Isaiah, are calling things good, good, and evil, evil. That's what we need to learn to do, and doing it through God's eyes. Psalms 119, verse 102, and he says, I have not departed from thy judgments. It says, I have not departed from thy judgments, Mishat, for thou hast taught me. And again, God needs to teach us his judgments. In Deuteronomy 4:1 and Deuteronomy 4:5, and I'm going to, in some other verses in Deuteronomy, is 4:8, 14 and 45, chapter 5, 1 and 31, chapter 6, 1 and 20, chapter 7, 11 through 12, chapter 8, 11, chapter 11, 11, 1, 32 and 32, chapter 12, 1, and chapter 26, 16 through 17, and chapter 30, verse 10. And here I'm going to read Deuteronomy 4 and 1, and all these verses have this in common. Now therefore, listen, O Israel, to the statutes and the judgments which I teach you, for to do them, that you may live and go in and possess the land which the Lord your God of your fathers give you. 5, behold, I have taught you statutes and judgments, even as God my God commanded me, that you shall do so in the land where you go to possess it. So anyway, in these verses, you'll see this whole deal where Moses is saying, constantly says, God commanded me to teach you statutes and judgments. And he brings up these two words constantly all through these verses. One thing I want to bring out is, I was praying one day and I saw these words, two words kind of always put together. And so I was praying to the Lord and I said, I see this word judgment, and I said, you know, you've been dealing with me for years about that, but I see the statutes, and I said, you know, I'm kind of clueless on that, and I said, well, maybe you're dealing with somebody else about statutes, and one day I might hear a teaching or meet somebody and kind of put these two together. Well, it kind of hit me then finally that back in the 90s, God, I believe, led me into looking into the government, dealing with wall builders, David Barton's material. And so anyway, statutes or laws. And anyway, there was a court case back in 1892, the Supreme Court, or the Church of Holy Trinity versus the Supreme Court, and in that it gives an explanation about developing a law. And they were saying that in a law, you can't write every little detail about a situation. And even as time progresses, that maybe technology or circumstances change, that then all of a sudden there's questions about the law. And so when there's questions, they were supposed to go. That's where the court system is supposed to go back and look at the minutes and anything they could dig up to see why they developed this law. And anyway, so they put in a couple examples. And anyway, so let's. And so anyway, one thing they brought up too is the letter of the law versus the intent. So I can violate the letter of the law, but not the intent. And here's an example I'm going to use. A couple examples is that it's unlawful to break out of jail, but what happens if the jail's on fire? And so I break out of jail, and of course I don't run, but I stand away in a safe area until it's dealt with. And so by the letter of the law, I violated the letter of the law because I broke out of jail, but in the law, they're not going to put in those exceptions. Well, you can break out of jail if you have a fire or flood or whatever, you know. They're not going to put that in there. And we wouldn't even probably think about it. And let's say if speeding, you know, you might be breaking the law and speeding, but if you have an injured person in your car and you're trying to get to the hospital and stuff like that, is speeding is understandable. And so anyway, you broke the letter of the law, but not the intent. And so anyway, I'm thinking about statutes or laws. And so anyway, here are these laws, and would judgment deal with understanding how to apply these laws? For example, it says, you know, to honor your mother and father. Well, how do I do that on a daily basis in my actions? The law doesn't really say it. It says honor your mother and father, but how do I apply it? Same thing of maybe keeping the Sabbath and all the other statutes. It's, you know, how do I apply that? So anyway, those are some of the verses and that little thought and combination. My next slide that you don't see is this guy, and he's got this steam coming out of his mouth. And so, are you even aware of a single breath that we make during the day, or how many we make in a day? So, I want to compare that with judging. How many times in the day do you really sit back and think, focus in that, you know, I just took a breath, and then I know none of us really counted how many breaths we take during the daytime. So it's the same thing with judging. How many judgments, a single judgment that we make, do we think of? And then how many do we really make during the daytime? I'm thinking of a situation, though, judgments come in various situations and different types I look at. And let's say driving a car. You know, it takes a judgment and going out and entering into traffic. And people would look at as a judgment, making a judgment of a sort. But, you know, you think, well, that's common. Or even going down the street, making sure you see oncoming traffic, that you're in your lane and in a safe zone. We think that's minor, but let's put your kids or your grandkids in the car. Excuse me. And now how more serious we might consider it. Because if I know I'm pulling out into traffic, that if here's the semi, and if I'm not pulling in the right situation, this semi is going to be right on top of me. So that's a judgment call. So while we're driving, how many times are we judging as we're driving along about our safety? So anyway, one thing I want to go back to a little bit is a couple letters. Sometimes we use judgment, and even before coming down here in the last month, like I said, if you listen to people's words, they'll use judgment. Anyway, I used to be a union chairman in the railroad, and so anyway, I was looking through some letters. And I want to kind of read them to you. These are old letters. But anyway, here's one letter. It says, I am writing in reply to you, your letter of April 25 of 63, in which you declined to handle the case of the transfer table due to an error in my judgment in handling this case. He kind of concludes a little bit of... it says, in conclusion, I wish to say that I find your entire letter distorted and biased. There's judgment. However, because my being too close to this case has warped my thinking and judgment, so I shall submit the case file to local board. So anyway, here he's using judgment. So we use judgment. Well, I thought we're not supposed to judge, but we use a judgment. And anyway, there's an example. Another letter too doesn't use judgment, but it uses justice, injustice. We feel that we have been done an injustice and have just cause to make a claim. So again, isn't this a judgment of the situation that we've been done unjustly? That's a judgment issue. One thing I believe the Lord's, as I've been trying to bring this to attention to the body, I've talked to many leaders and stuff, and with really not many good results. But anyway, I want to read a real short clip from, it says to go to the Jew first. And so this whole deal, my experience here is about really 40 years. And that's kind of interesting to me. But anyway, so it says go to the Jew first. And I thought, well, I'm going to present this before some Jewish people and see how they take it. And so there's a ministry. I'm not going to mention it. And so I was referred to another person who has a congregation. And anyway, this is what it says. Wanted to give you a call. This is a message, and I still have the message on my recorder. But anyway, this is the message that was left. It said, wanted to give you a call. Told you that you had a question regarding the issue of judging in light of Isaiah 1:26, Matthew 7:1, and some other verses. I listened to your voicemail, and I'm not sure I get the gist of it. But Gary, let me take a stab and call you back if you need to. Let me put it to you this way. When the Bible teaches this, we are not to put ourselves in the role of the position of judge. Obviously, God has specific people for that. So, to me, that doesn't make sense. Is that we're not supposed to put in a role in positions, but obviously God has people for that, specific people for that. Well, who are these specific people? You know, maybe you're one of those specific people, and you know, if I come across to you, and I see you judging, because that's what a judge does, and I say, well, you know, you're not supposed to be judged because you're not one of the specific people. And so who are they? Do they have a tattoo over their head, judge or whatever? So these specific people are going to judge, and they're going to be people that breathe air. So how do we distinguish those people? So are they putting themselves in the role of judge? Like I said, just not logical. He goes on, as far as Matthew 7:1, judge not lest you be judged. That is the Greek word krino, which I brought out in my presentations. And if you look at that word, and I can't really go to it right off the bat real fast. If you look up what krino means, this is 29:19, if I remember correctly, and read the definition. But anyway, he says that it means we do not put ourselves in the role of judges. I didn't see that in the definition of krino. However, Gary, that does not prevent us from putting ourselves in the role of being discerning, to try to make determination on specific things. One thing to do is to do a word search or study on the Greek words of krino, anakrino, diakrino. I'm a little rusty, but I looked at a previous presentation, and in that is interesting is that these words can be or are in the King James translated as discerning in the in one verse, but in another verse they're judging or is attached, or similar words to judging or translated from krino and anakrino. So what I think what it is God says I'll restore the judges as at first. So this discerning, it's a softer word, and we think, well, I'm just discerning. But to me, if you really study, I think is judging. And we don't want to say, I'm judging. We're scared of that, and that word. But if you really look at what you're doing, you're judging constantly about situations. Things that aren't right, or people that are not right, or right, or what you think is right. So we are judging. Trying to think of something real quick along those lines. But anyway, look up those words and see that how they are applied. Discern. I think it's only mentioned about 8 times in the King James and the Strong's, and see how they're translated both as discern and judging. Okay, so that kind of ends my presentation, but I'm going to give you a little bit something to think about too. Since we're in the period of Sukkot here, is a sukkah. The deeper meaning of Sukkot. Anyway, we're supposed to build sukkahs, and if you go to Leviticus 23:39-40, it talks about building a sukkah during Sukkot, and they were supposed to get different branches of palm and thick tree from limbs from thick trees, willows, and you shall rejoice before the Lord. One thing makes me think a little bit, that's not really a lulav, but because it's dealing with building a sukkah. But anyway, Nehemiah 8:14-15 and talks about going out and fetching olive branches, pine branches, myrtle branches, and palm branches, and branches of thick trees to make booths, sukkah, as it is written. So anyway, what is written, it's what's written in the Torah, which would go back to Leviticus. So anyway, these branches are for building a sukkah. Now, sukkah comes from H 5521. If you look up that, that's a hut or lair, and also a pavilion, tabernacle, tent. So anyway, if you look up tent also, let me see. Well, let me go to this. So anyway, sukkah is, like I said, 5521, and it comes from 5520, which says from 5526, a hut as of entwined bogs, which are limbs. So it's entwined limbs. 5526, a primitive root properly to entwine as a screen, by implication to fence, to cover over. So in the Browns driver Briggs, if you look down a little bit on it, and in 4A it says to weave together. So what we're supposed to do is go out and get the branches. And if you think about a shepherd back in the time, if you're going to stay out in the field, what would you do is go for a temporary dwelling. You go and get these limbs and kind of weave them or entwine them together for your protection or shepherd's hut. Well, anyway, Mishka, like I said, I'm bad on pronunciation, but H4908 is a residence including a shepherd's hut. So anyway, there's the shepherd's hut. But now I want to put in John 15:5, where Yeshua says, "I'm the vine, you are the branches." So can you see Yeshua? You get different branches to weave a sukkah, and I think we're all a little different, so you could see him weaving and entwining us for his sukkah, his shepherd's hut, and for his tabernacle, for his final Sukkot, which would be a festival after the harvest of celebration. So anyway, hopefully that brings a little smile to your face. Anyway, that ends my presentation on judging. There's part one and part two, and thanks for listening.